Jared and the GM live from Pete and Terry's Tavern at Bridgestone Arena. And Terry Crisp is going to join us in under 30 minutes, Floyd. So get excited about that. Preds tonight, final home preseason game against the Carolina Hurricanes. I wonder if you can gamble on this game. I'm sure you can.
I'm going to guess you can gamble on anything, but I don't know.
I would say take the Preds. I saw Willie's card because the game's going to be on TV today. I saw Willie's card, and the Preds have most of their regulars in there, and the Hurricanes, I don't think, have a ton of their regulars in there. So my gut would tell me take the Predators in that regard. But anywho, so I want to get to something Marcus Mariota said, and then we have some Preds thoughts to get to. But Marcus met with the media today, and as we've always said, Wednesday on this show, we're going to do the Marcus Mariota official approval poll rating. So last week, Mariota had an approval rating of 52%. This week, he's currently polling at 32%, down from 74% in week one. So the fans, obviously, are not happy with what they're seeing. But Marcus took a bunch of questions today and answered them, and, you know, it was all kind of typical Marcus fashion. And then he was asked today, is he seeing the whole field? Now, I feel like, Floyd, it's easy for people who don't know football just to say, he doesn't see the field. He can't read the defense. He X, Y, Z. I feel like it's a lot easier for somebody like you to actually judge whether or not a quarterback is seeing the field or can read a defense.
Right.
So when you hear callers say things like, he can't read the defense, like what that's got to just go in one ear and out.
Yeah. I mean, it's fairly meaningless.
Do you think he can read defenses?
Yeah. No, I don't know that he can read the whole field, but he doesn't have time to read the whole field. So it doesn't matter.
Well, today he was asked about whether or not, can you see the whole field, Marcus? This was that.
How would you maybe rate or characterize how you're seeing the field right now?
I feel like I'm seeing it fine. You know, like any other guy, I think any other quarterback, week to week, there might be one that you miss or a couple that you miss that you would want to have back. But for the most part, I feel like I'm seeing everything pretty good.
So Mariota says he's seeing the field fine. He was asked today, how many times do you look at one read? And he said, not a lot. So for the narrative that is Marcus doesn't see the field or Marcus can't read the defense, he's basically saying that that's not the case. I have no idea if he can see the field or not, or if he's seeing guys open or missing guys open, or things of that like. And then to your point, how much of that has to do with the amount of time that he does not have standing back?
Yeah, I mean, the point, you're able to read the field, one, if you're tremendously experienced. Tom Brady can see the whole field in a second and a half because he knows exactly when the ball snapped, he's got 99% of where the ball is going in his head. So that when he comes out, it's a matter of, I know what I'm going to do on the ball, get ready, here it comes. Now all of a sudden there's something that I didn't recognize, or they tricked me, or whatever the case may be. Then it's automatically your next guy, and boom, the ball comes out. So, I mean, that's if you're really, really experienced, you can do that, I think. And or if you're Mahomes and you've got a ton of time to throw the ball, both because your offensive line is pretty good and secondly because you're moving around all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So all of a sudden you've got pretty good protection. Now it's 3 seconds. Okay, I'm going to slide out here. Now it's 4 seconds. Oh, okay, I see what that is. Zing, here goes the ball. And so, I mean, I think there's that. But if you're playing at a place where you know, the ball has to come out in 2 seconds or 2.5 seconds, I mean, you don't have, in 2.5 seconds, you can't see all five progressions of a read simply because you don't have time to do all that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the ball comes out sooner than that. So you get one or two, maybe three max. That's like the touchdown pass to Quisenberry. I mean, he wasn't the first pick.
Wasn't the first pick Bates on that play? The fullback coming out?
I'd have to remember the play, but I mean, he looked at least one, if not two, other guys before giving it to Quisenberry. So I mean, that was not, you know, he was not the first pick, and I think Quisenberry even said that.
I feel like when non-football people talk about seeing the field or reading defenses, I feel like it's kind of like a cover for basically asking, like, are you too stupid to play the position of quarterback? You know what I mean? Like, how would you say you're seeing the field?
Well, yeah,
you know,
but see, kind of. And again, they people will ask that question when they don't even know what they're taught to see. You know, are you reading the entire coverage? Are you just reading alignment of the DBs? Are you reading up and back? Are you reading side to side? Are you reading only half the field? Are you reading the free safety? You know, who? Because every coach, not every coach, but a lot of coaches do it a little bit differently. And so whatever you're taught to read has a bearing on how much info you're going to get and what you're going to do with the ball a lot of times. I mean, when we used to be run and shoot, we threw the ball every snap. There were only five coverages they cared about. That was it. Well, once you got to the point, Warren Moon got to the point that he knew those five coverages, knew the ins and outs, it wasn't a matter of what the coverage was. It was a matter of what's the technique the corner is using. And if the corner is using this technique on this pass, the ball goes there. If he's on the other side and we're trying to run that, then the ball goes to the next guy.
Well,
it's everybody wants to make it sound like it's something that's really easy. It's tremendously intricate and tremendously difficult.
So I hearken this to like Tony Romo, who played like, I don't know, 10 years in the NFL as a quarterback. And Tony Romo, because of what team he played for and really for the lack of success that they had when he was the quarterback, Tony Romo was one of the single most criticized quarterbacks in the NFL when he played. Tony goes into the broadcast booth and basically calls out plays before they happen because he can read the coverage. And people are like, oh my God, Tony Romo should be a head coach. And I'm sitting there thinking to myself, like, I feel like if you put Carson Palmer in the booth, now maybe Carson doesn't have the personality Tony has, but I bet you Carson Palmer could probably see a lot of the same things Tony sees.
Oh, yeah.
And my gut tells me Marcus could probably see a lot of the things. Now, we all know Marcus would be terrible on TV, but my gut kind of tells me Marcus could see a lot of those things on TV, too. I think what happens is, like, when I was a kid, I used to go to Vanderbilt basketball camp, right? And one of the players would take the basketball and would just fire it up from wherever and just absolutely nail it, swish it, 10 times out of 10. I used to be like, it's incredible. How can somebody just stand there, as hard as it is for me to hit jump shots, can just stand there from 25 feet away from the basket and just swish, 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 swish? And I'm like, now I realize it's because that's their job. You know, just like with me, someone's like, how can you talk about the Titans for 4 hours a day? Because that's my job. And so when it comes to playing quarterback, it's like, how can Tony Romo see what the defense is going to do? Because that's his job. And so I don't think that I have anywhere near the ability to decide whether or not Marcus can see the field or read the defense. But I do think people are interested in questions like that because they think in their head Marcus can't read the defense or Marcus can't see the field.
And the hard part about trying to describe it to people is when you start describing it, you lose them. I mean, you know, generally speaking, and you start talking about, okay, this is what we're looking for. And in this pattern, because you say, all right, here's this pattern. Three curls and a swing. One of the simplest patterns in any offense ever. Mm-hmm. All right, you say, okay, if it's two deep and they're using this technique, we're going to do it. If it's three deep and they're rolling strong side, we're going to do this. If it's three deep and they're rolling weak side, we're going to throw the ball here. If it's, and by the time you get through all of that, they're gone. You know, they have no, and you're talking about one pattern versus a couple of coverages. But it gets so, you know, by the time you get to all the coaching points, they've got no concept about what you're talking about.
And that's why when Drew Brees stands there and he's like pointing at every single player, he's telling every single person what to do because he knows what that guy's
going
to do.
And he knows exactly where he's going with the ball. He knows who he's going to throw it to. Now, are there exceptions? Sure. You know, somebody could cover him. Somebody could change techniques on him. Somebody, all of those kinds of things. Receiver could fall down. Those are all options, but he knows what he's going to do with the ball if those things happen.
Coming up next, I have a conspiracy theory about a couple of roster moves the Predators made because they don't make sense to me. So I have a conspiracy theory about them that we'll get to next. We are live at Bridgestone Arena where the Predators play tonight. Crispy is going to join us coming up in a little bit. It's Jared and the GM on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Tolvanen with a big goal at the time to get us. I felt like I was really happy with our group because I felt like we just kept we were chasing the game. And we were behind, we caught it, we're behind, we caught it, we're behind, we caught it. And so we're able to hang in there. But it was the contributions from Pitlick. It was the contributions from Trennan, who got in a big scrap. It was the contributions from Josh Wilkins, who made the pass to Tolvanen. And so there was a lot of good things that went on inside of that game that we were real proud of our young players.
That was Peter Laviolette talking about the young players. Now, the Josh Wilkins and those kind of guys, do those on your own time. The two that matter to me. Pitlick, Tolvanen. Those are two guys who I think should be on the team right now, or at least are good enough to be on the team right now and will probably come up and help the team at some point. But Floyd Reese, they're not on the team right now. They've gotten sent down. And I'm bothered by that, obviously, because I think that people have roster spots who may not have the potential that those guys have. But I have a theory about this, a conspiracy theory.
Okay.
So, have you noticed what Laviolette's done with the lines, how he's broken up the Johansson, Arvidsson, and Forsberg line?
No.
So, what he's got now is he's got Duchesne and Forsberg together, and he's got Arvidsson and Johansson together.
Ah, help both lines.
He's got Mikael Granlund with Johansson and Arvidsson, and he's got Kyle Turris, I believe, or maybe it's the other way around. I don't know. He's got Kyle Turris. It's the other way around?
I think so, yeah.
Okay, so Granlund is with Arvidsson and Johansson, and Turris, no.
Turris is with Johansson and Arvidsson. That's
okay,
right.
So Turris is with Johansson and Arvidsson. Okay, and then the other one has Granlund. So he's breaking up the Jofa line in order to put Matt Duchesne and just whatever. And we talked about that when they signed Duchesne, could that be something they do? They have $1.2 or $1.3 million in cap space. I wonder if David Poile is holding out hope that early in the season, either Granlund, Turris, or Smith plays well enough to be able to get him something decent in return, or in Turris's case, to where he doesn't have to eat any salary to trade him, and then turn around and call up Tolvanen and put him in that spot.
Well, I mean, if he traded anybody or lost anybody, you'd like to think Tolvanen would be the first guy brought up, or I would.
Well, I think Pitlick, they probably call him up before they call Tolvanen up, but I don't know.
Right.
And Pitlick had the game winner the other night, and you know they loved that guy enough to let him play a game last year in order to get him to sign with the team. So, I mean, they love that Pitlick. Either one I'd rather see out there than Kyle Turris. You know, I mean, I've no offense to Kyle Turris. I've seen enough of Kyle Turris. I guess I'm just saying that I wonder if you know, because we heard that David was trying to deal Kyle Turris in the offseason, and it's not a surprise that David was trying to deal Kyle Turris, and I don't think any general manager around the league was surprised when they got a call that said, hey, you know, what do you think about Kyle Turris? Because, you know, they all watch just like we do. The guy's making $6 million, and he did nothing last year. So I think David is holding out hope that if I put Turris with Arvidsson and Johansson, that surely he's going to play better than he did last year because he's got some real firepower that he's playing with. And that Granlund, who's more of a creator and not a scorer, if I put him with Duchesne and Forsberg, then those two guys can score and Granlund can do all the creating, and then maybe somebody will call me and offer me something crazy for Granlund. And if worse comes to worse, I can dump off Smith and his $4 million and then call up Pitlick or Tolvanen. I don't know. But I guess what I'm saying is I think they're hoping Turris turns it around so that they can then trade him and not have to retain any salary in order to do so.
Right. But, I mean, the other side of that coin is if he turns it around and he's playing
you're
really
not
good,
trade
gonna, yeah, they're going to want him. You know, if that were to happen, all those things you're talking about, I mean, they would welcome them on this team. Say, hey, we knew you could do it. We were in love with you the whole time.
Which then my hope would be that they think that Tolvanen or Pitlick could do better, so then they trade them, and then Tolvanen or Pitlick comes up, and they do better than Kyle Turris. That's the hope.
Maybe.
Is it a wild theory?
Have you ever had a theory that wasn't wild?
Yes.
Have you?
I think all my theories are pretty spot on.
I know.
And it gets me to the next point, which is, as far as the Predators are concerned in my mind, and that is, I mean, I get the idea to try to reclimate Kyle Turris because he's not a bottom six player. But the problem is he's not really a top six player right now, and he's really not a winger. But they're going to put him on the wing. I mean, they're basically putting him on the first line on the wing. The hope is that by playing with Forsberg and or by playing with Arvidsson and Johansson, that makes him better, right?
Right.
What's the other side of the coin that it makes them worse?
Makes the line worse, yes.
And how much does that worry you?
I mean, that was our best line, one of the better lines in the NHL.
Because, no offense, but Johansson doesn't love to shoot. So if I'm playing the Predators and I've got Duchesne and Forsberg on another line, well, my top pair is going against that line. Because that's a line that has two guys, three if you count Granlund, who can score. But I'm putting my top pair, my top defensive pair, on Forsberg and Duchesne. Because on the Arvidsson line, I've only got one guy I've got to really worry about trying to score. And that's Arvidsson. And if they worry about Arvidsson trying to score, I worry that's going to keep Arvidsson from scoring. Because part of the reason Arvidsson's so good is because he plays on a line with good players. And then he just out-hustles everybody else.
Right.
So I'm not second-guessing Peter's decision to break up the lines because I guess I'm okay with it. But I am kind of just playing the devil's advocate here and saying, is it really a smart move to break up that line? Is it really smart to go in the season?
I mean, the good part, none of it's permanent. You know, so they could, I mean, they may do that for two games and not see any output. And, you know, all of a sudden, we're going back. We're switching back up, you know, and forget the whole thing. I mean, you're not going to ride an experiment that, or what do you call it, theory or whatever you call it. Yeah, you're not going to ride that theory to the point that you're, you know, 0-30. I mean, it's going to, you go a couple games and it doesn't work and it's okay. It was a good thought.
If you have four good forwards, you know, the four good forwards, Forsberg, Arvidsson, Johansson, Duchesne. Doesn't it kind of make sense to go 2-2 as opposed to going 3 and then putting one guy, Duchesne, on his own line?
Yeah, it depends on what you do to the line. I mean, in my opinion, your first line, if you could look at the first line and say, okay, we're going to get this many points out of this first line, and all of a sudden, by doing that, the points drop by 25%, you're going, whoa, wait a minute now. You know, this may not be the best idea. And so I think you have to measure it that way because it's all, in my opinion, it's always better to have one that is among the best in the business than it is to have two okays.
But then what do you do with Duchesne if you go back to, you know, the main line and then Duchesne's out there with Granlund and Smith?
And you got an okay. You got a really good one and an okay one.
Well, that still should be better than what you got out of the second line last year.
Oh, I would think. I mean, or else, yeah, I would think.
And you were popping him in on the power play the other night, which, again, would be another good sign because that's the other reason why Duchesne's here.
And we all know where the power play was. So everybody's got to be thrilled about that.
Terry Crisp, we are in his bar right now at Pete and Terry's Tavern. Crispy is going to join us for the first time this season. We have not talked to Crispy in a long, long time. So it should be exciting to get to see him. He's probably missed me. You, I'm not so sure about. Well, you know, you guys like to team up, the old GM and the old coach. You guys like to team up on me. Well, we'll see.
Key word there, being old.
No.
We're both old.
No. Coming up next, Crispy going to join us. We're live from Bridgestone Arena. Jared, the GM. Preds play tonight against Carolina in their final exhibition home game. Let me tell you about Authentically American. Authentically American's got a lot of new things coming down the pipe I cannot wait to tell you about. But first, let me tell you about what I love about Authentically American, and it is how everybody at our business loves rocking their Authentically American. Floyd's got Authentically American on today. I've got Authentically American on today. Dave, our on-site engineer, has Authentically American on today. And your business will love them, too. That's right. We wear our Authentically American gear all the time, not just when we have to, but when we want to because we love it. Everything from Authentically American is made right here in the United States of America, which means it's a better product, but it's competitively priced with what you and your company are already buying. Authentically American is a brand about celebrating patriotism, believing in the American worker, and honoring the American hero, and they donate 10% of their gross profits to veteran and first responder charities. Authentically American is online at AuthenticallyAmerican.us, AuthenticallyAmerican.us, Authentically American, the next iconic brand that is truly American-made. Chair of the GM, it's ESPN 102.5 The Game. Jared and the GM live at Bridgestone Arena, and we are in Pete and Terry's Tavern, and we are joined by the proprietor of Pete and Terry's Tavern, Terrence Arthur Crisp. Couple of things. Number one, thank you so very much, Crispy, for having us in your bar.
Hey, my pleasure, and I heard that you guys are big, heavy tippers. Well, GM is. I mean, that buffalo you were squeezing, I think there's something on the table.
Hey, if we do proportionate.
You squeezed out of that quarter of that buffalo.
Hey, if we do proportionate to net worth, I think I might be a better tipper than the GM. I don't know if that's how we're playing it. Crispy, first off, how you doing? You know, we usually don't ask people that. We haven't seen you in a month of Sundays, and it is so good to see you.
You know, it was great. My wife and I went back up home to Canada for the 3 months, which we always do. And when you have 10 grandchildren, you know it's a busy summer, but a great summer. And we keep saying that the greatest thing is they still want to come home and get back together. And there's going to come a day like they're getting up there.
Oh,
a couple are 18 years old, some are 14, and it comes a time. They get girlfriends, boyfriends, their own car, blah, blah. So it's wonderful. Just get away from it. Relax, and then come on back home and join class acts like you two right here.
Oh, that's
what more
could
I hope for?
That's why we love you. How do we feel about the Predators this year? P.K. Subban out, Matt Duchene, Dan Lambert in. I went to the game Saturday night against Tampa. I saw power play goals. I saw Duchene score. I saw Tolvanen with a beauty, even though he got sent down. How do we feel about the Predators as they really are rounding third and heading for home to start the season?
You know what? I like what I see in the preseason. Now, you and I, Jim, how many of those have we been through?
Oh, yeah.
And I call them morning glories. You have another word for them, probably the ones that shine and then sort of disappear into the darkness. And you say, what happened? Where'd they go? And the same thing at all training camps. But I am really, really keen and excited about our depth chart now. I'm looking at our depth chart, meaning Milwaukee, the kids that are down there, and some of the ones they sent down from this training camp that I thought had a great training camp here. And to me, that's what I'm most excited about. And the other thing I'm not excited, but I want to see our attitude this year right off the bat from the first playoff round last year when we got dumped and some of the guys that didn't have exactly the playoffs, I felt that they could have had.
Some of the guys that got sent down surprised you?
Yes, they did. It surprised me.
Is that because the quality of the team is so good that that maybe there wasn't room, or if you were there, you might have switched them with somebody else? Ah. Okay.
I was coming in, GM, listening to you two guys chatting.
Chatting.
And he'll figure that out pretty soon when he figures out the word. If he sounds it out,
yes.
I was laughing. And what you just asked me feeds right into what the little guy here was saying.
How are you doing?
You know what? Some of the kids, and I've been to so many training camps, and if you're a GM or a coach, you understand you've done it before and the intricacies of what you have to do, and sometimes it's not what you want to do,
but
it's what the situation demands at that given time.
Mm-hmm.
And I see it every training camp, as a player, as a coach. You see that when the training camp is done, you say, where'd this guy go? He looked pretty good out there. This guy, we felt, and everybody has the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
You felt there's a couple guys maybe should have made it. You do, I do, yeah. But it happens every time, every year.
Well, I felt like last year Rocco was the guy in training camp who we kind of saw in these preseason games, and we're like, hey, Rocco's pretty good now. Maybe Rocco should make the team, and Rocco didn't make the team. And then a month later, Rocco was here, and then Rocco almost saved everybody's bacon in the playoffs. And I feel like, I mean, to me, Crispy, and correct me if I'm wrong here, I think over time, Tolvanen's going to be the better of the two. I think Pitlick is ready to play right now and help this team play.
I like
what
this
do you
game.
See out of those
I
two
like
guys?
I like Pitlick. The three guys that I was hoping would stay and get a long look was Pitlick, Tolvanen, and the guy that's still here, Tenorti. I like his game. Big, solid, good team person, sticks up for his teammates, not afraid to drop the gloves. And, you know, when you look around our division and you look at the size of some of the other teams and the size that they have on their team, I'm on Tenorti's bandwagon.
Fantastic.
But having said that, we all know that what happens when you start looking at contracts and money and what you have and what you don't have. So, but you know what? David Poile has been in this game so long and knows the game so well that he has been through this hundreds of times probably. And one thing he has not been afraid to do is to send them down to Milwaukee, if that case called for it, but bring them back. Not afraid to bring them back.
And you know it's not happenstance. I mean, there's a method to the madness.
Yes.
He's looking down the road and he's saying, okay, this is, you know, I'll do this for so long and then we'll do. We were talking earlier, it looks like Peter may have taken the first line and split them up a little bit. And it breaks down. I'm not evaluating players as much as I am philosophy. If you were coaching or GMing or whatever, is that what you know, would you take your best line and split it up a little bit to hopefully get two good lines, maybe neither one as good as that first one?
You know, I'm going to hedge my bet on that one. Yes, in a lot of areas, that one, yes. Except that when you have Johansson in one center spot and Duchesne, the new one who I love coming in, you got two top centermen. Yeah. You don't want to waste either one. So your attitude is, let's give both of them wingers to go with. So if that means that you have to break up your top line, take one of those good ones off, give him to Duchesne, I'm all for it. And as an opposing coach, I hope you don't do it. I want you to have one line. One good, I can check one line. I can do my best in him. You
wonderful.
Throw two at me, like a lot of the teams are doing, and I'm saying, oh, no, here comes Duchesne and Arvey, or Duchesne and Forsberg. Here comes Johansson and Arvey, or whichever way you want to look at it. And you're saying, oh, it makes you a better team. But it also, and I heard Jared saying, it gives the coach a lot of options, a lot more options to work with.
Terry Crisp with us. Crispy, as always, what did you think of the power play Saturday against Tampa? I mean, they were scoring. Now, which was funny was when they started, Floyd and I were talking on the air. I go, how do you start practice on Saturday and play two games on Monday? Like, how do you put, you don't need time to practice. You know, like, how do you, hey, we're going to revamp the whole offense.
Practice, you want to talk practice.
We're going to revamp the entire system.
Practice.
We're going to bring in a coach who comes in and changes the entire power play, and you're going to have one day of practice, and you're going to get out there. So Peter said yesterday on the midday show, which I thought was genius, he said, hey, I took those five, talking about Duchesne, Forsberg, Arvidsson, Johansson, and Yossi, I took them and Dan Lambert and put them to the side for 5 days, and they worked on the power play. And they came out against Tampa, and yes, it looked like third stringers for Tampa, but they went out there against Tampa, and they put that puck in the net, and they put it on the net, and they looked efficient out there. What did you think of the power play?
I loved it. When I first saw it, I saw the system, the 1-3-1 they were going to use out there, which I've loved all along, have always maintained you have to have a guy in front of the net and a guy in the slot. Two most dangerous areas ever. And if you watched one of our games here, Florida, when they played us up here, they used that exact same power play, and they must have had six, maybe seven, unbelievable good scoring chances. Our goaltenders either made a save or they hit the post or went wide of the net. I like that attitude. But what you just said, to your point, Jared, we get to talk to some of the players. And I was talking to two of the players on the power play. We're just sort of chatting and kibitzing, and they said, we put hours in on that. He said, just what you just said. Coach Lab gave us full blank whatever permission to do it. And that's what they needed. That's what the guys were waiting for, to take it, gel it, and say, okay, boys, now we get to know each other, get to know the system. And I'm thinking right now also that Coach Lambert, who was called, pulled in to basically work with the power play as one of the coaches, is going to, the one you just described, but you'll see another another formation like you see in football. You can't run just one formation all the time, even though you get good at it. Yeah. The other team is going to pretty soon wheel in on it and say, hey, here's how we stop them. So you'll see another one, but I did like that.
So did you see a difference in philosophy, a difference in technique, a different scheme?
I saw more puck movement, quicker, faster. And what was our one complaint all the time about our power play?
Standing around.
We're just standing, killing time with the puck. These guys, bing, 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 bing. If you're a penalty killer, you hate when they move the puck because you got to be moving with it. If they're standing there stick handling and showing off, you say, them standing there show off. I don't care. You ain't going nowhere. Well, now, these guys were snapping the puck to each other and doing. And all five guys on that power play, when the opening was there for the shot, they were taking it. It didn't have to be Duchesne. It didn't have to be Arvey or Forsberg on a situation. And the other thing, if you noticed, we didn't get as many shots blocked. And why didn't we get as many shots blocked? Because we were releasing the puck quicker. And I heard you talking football a while ago about your quarterback trying to read the field and read all the plays. Well, it can't be done. You can take a peek.
Yeah.
Same as a power play. When that spot's there, and it's only open for a split second.
Exactly.
Take advantage of it. That's why they're not blocked.
Terry Crisp with us. Crispy, last year David Poile said before the start of the playoffs that even if he were allowed to gamble on hockey, there's no way he would have done it last year because he thought the teams were so close. And then we see a Tampa team that may be one of the best regular season teams of my lifetime, and they get out bounced in four games in the first round. I think that you can argue that these series in the playoffs were so close that maybe just a little bit of new blood by bringing in Matt Duchesne, maybe a little bit of an attitude adjustment. With this team's goaltending, they still should be contending for the Cup, and we should still look at it like that. But I'm not certain the fans feel like this is a Cup-contending team. When you watch them, do you think they still have that potential?
Yes, we certainly do. But having said that, you said it. The parity in our division especially, I wouldn't even want to have to bet a dime on who's going to beat who in the first round of our playoffs and when we meet them. Because when you look at the teams this year, and I'm going over them, Dallas just picked up Perry and Pavelski. They're a better hockey club, and they were a good hockey club last year, as we well know. When you watch St. Louis, they won the Cup. They got a little better. Winnipeg's on a mission now. They are really mad and agitated. You know who's going to come at you hard and strong all year? Avalanche. Their team last year, towards the end, were pounding.
Yeah.
And another team is going to take you to the woodshed every night, and you better be ready, is the Coyotes. Rick Tocchet is the head coach there. I coached him. He was my captain. Another team. So you sit, and what I just described to you, you're going to be seeing that every time you play in your division, every time that's what you're up against.
Last one for you, Crispy. Fabbro, do you think he's ready for top 4 minutes? That's what he's going to get, you know, as one of your top two pairs? I thought he looked fantastic in the Dallas series. Is he ready for it this year?
He was ready last year. This kid stepped in unbelievable. Took him a couple games to figure it out. Like, not the thinking part of it. Hell, he's smart enough to play anywhere on your thinking. But how quick it is up here and how quick things close on you, move on you. Once he figured that out, this kid's going to be good. Now, we're not going to put the whole world on his shoulders. Not just yet. But, yeah, you know what? He's top four. Last year in the playoffs, he was in the top two of our defensemen. Let's be honest.
Although that's more of a, I won't say like pointing the finger at other people, but
you asked me where he was.
That's more of what
and I didn't
was
say,
than it was.
And I didn't say who he
was
with.
Great,
I didn't see who he was with. I might have meant that he was a top defenseman with Austin
Any
Watson
one of
when
them.
They played
sure.
with Austin Watson. Who knows?
Crispy, thank you for letting us hang out in your bar today. Thank you for coming on the show. I will say this. It is pretty cool to have your own bar at the arena.
You know what? Pete and I love it when they did this. It was quite a tribute, quite an honor. We felt that.
Fantastic.
Who the heck gets this? And the funniest part was when it first happened, and my sister, who is as tight as barking to a tree and money, et cetera, Canada, she went, what are you doing? Have you lost your total mind? I said, what's wrong with you? She said, I just saw on Facebook where you and Pete have a bar. You bought a bar. You're going to lose your shirt. Whoa, sis. I didn't buy the bar. I just sort of hold down a bar stool.
There you go.
Crispy Sports Bar and Grill. We can go ahead and license that around town. We get the Canadian chicken fingers, which are the same as regular chicken fingers. And is there on the menu? I haven't looked. I should have. Is there a true Terry Crisp cocktail here on the Pete and Terry's Tab. Oh, here we go. Pete and Terry's favorite, buffalo chicken dip. Is that your favorite?
That's Pete. I'm under the buffalo.
Crispy's Philly egg rolls.
Philly, whoa, you know, you like that one, good. Jared. That's right up your alley.
Is it up yours, though? Flatbread pizza, Tavern Cobb, and Pete's beef on a weck.
Weck. That's a buffalo special. That's it. The buffalo wings and the weck are Petey from Buffalo.
But do we have any, like, crispy cocktails? Like, Terry Crisp.
Crispy doesn't drink cocktails, by the way. I'm a beer man or a whiskey man. So if you're referring to a cocktail with the little umbrella that you drink and the little green one, and they call them a grasshopper and a sweet margarita and smell of your feet. They don't smell sweet. No, you don't get it, okay? I'm out of here.
Beer and whiskey.
Thanks, GM. Thank you.
Cocktail, please. Terry Crisp, as always. Crispy, look forward to seeing you every week throughout the hockey season. Good to see you back. Jared the GM, live from Bridgestone Arena at Crispy's, Pete and Terry's Tavern, CSPN 102.5 The Game.
Some of these negative plays where, you know, you seem like to get in a groove and then maybe, like you said, there's a penalty or shortage of yards. How do you go about?
Well, I think that I was hopeful that the emphasis on fundamentals and trying to just get back to that, I think some of those things, the details or the discipline of saying, hey, I'm on the ball or I'm off the ball. You know, somebody's got to be on, somebody's got to be off. You have to be able to help the guy next to you in some capacity. And just maybe it's a small reminder. We all know the formations. We all know. But sometimes a little reminder of something that says I'm on, I'm off. And then the penalties, I think the post-snap penalties are something that if we can continue to clean up the fundamentals and how we block or block at the second level sometimes, I think those are showing up where, you know, guys are getting out in space and it's the point of attack and the guy's going to make a play and we, you know, continue to keep our hands outside or restrict them. I mean, those are penalties that hurt us and, you know, those are penalties that should be called.
That's a breakdown right there from Mike Vrabel. Welcome back to the show, Jared and the GM. So we'll get to the phones in a second. Can I just say one thing I've noticed about Mike Vrabel lately?
Okay.
And remember that I do think Vrabel's an okay coach. You know, I mean, I am very critical when it's time to be critical. But I actually last year begged for him to stop doing this. And he stopped doing it this year. And I kind of wonder why. Have you noticed Mike Vrabel has stopped with answering every question, I need to coach better? Remember last year? Everything was, coach, what does the team need to do to get the game ready? I need to coach better. Or, coach, what happened today? Bad coaching, and it starts with me. He did that every day last year, and it got to the point to where I was like, I'm so tired of hearing you say bad coaching that, A, it comes off as just totally hollow, but, B, if you keep saying bad coaching, eventually I'm just going to get mad at you because you keep saying it's bad coaching, so guess what? It's probably bad coaching. And I noticed today he has not throughout Indy, Jacksonville, the two devastating losses, he has not ever pointed the finger at himself to say bad coaching. And I kind of wondering why he hasn't, but I tipped the cap because I was so tired of hearing that last year.
Well, I think the press conference I heard from the last game, or maybe it was an interview with somebody. I mean, the first thing he said was that we've got to coach better. We've got to play better. We've got to, you know, and he went through two or three different things. I don't know.
I heard him talking when he went on his accountability rant. I heard him say something along the lines of, we all have to be better, including us coaches, and we have to coach better. But it wasn't last year where the thesis statement was, you know, it was almost like, if you ask a question, Johnny in the back's going to hand you a laminated card that says, I need to coach better. And I appreciate the fact that he's not doing that this year. And I think it's probably because somebody said, Mike, if you say that every day, it's going to eventually just ring hollow to everybody, including the players and the press, and it's just going to make people mad if you keep doing it time after time. Although now his new thing's accountability, and I don't even know why it is accountability.
Well, the accountability, again, is not for you or us. The accountability is for the players.
I think it's for one player in particular, number 8.
Well, no, maybe, but, I mean, it's for every player, for the players to I mean, accountability in his mind, and I'm talking like he's told me this, which he has not, but knowing where he came from, I mean, accountability is just what he was talking about. accountability is, hey, if I look over there and you're not lined up correctly, I expect you to be lined up correctly. If you're not, you have to expect me to help you get lined up correctly.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what he's talking about with accountability, is he's talking about, hey, all of us need to, if I'm a linebacker and your responsibility is that gap defensive tackle, I have to expect you're going to be in that gap. And if you're not, I want to know why. And you need to expect me to be in this gap. And if I'm not, you need to come and ask me why. I think that's what they're trying to preach.
By the way, 1 minute ago, headline from Pro Football Talk. Bill Belichick defends Sony Michel, says Patriots need to block better and
coach better.
Coach better. Yeah. There you go. Let's go to your phones. Dave is up next. 615-737-1025 on the Titans, live from Pete and Terry's Tavern. Go ahead, Dave.
Hey, Dave. How you doing, Jared?
Good.
I got a quick question for you. Are you still going with your 12-4 this season?
You know what's funny? I'm not backing down. I'm not backing down. I'm staying on 12-4 because I feel like I'm not a flip-flopper unlike other people, and I believe in Mariota, even though I don't know why. I don't know why I believe in Mariota, but I do.
This 12-4 will haunt you the rest of your career.
It's not me. No, this is what people misconstrue about 12-4.
This will be a mark.
This is what people misconstrue about this.
You will never get rid of scar. It's going to leave a scar.
People think that my 12-4 thing was like a reality prediction. Like, they're going to be 12-4. Yes, it wasn't. It was more of the belief of, it's time to be good. Like, it's time to not just piss games away like they did Indianapolis. Like, it's time to be good. And, you know, and it's like Vrabel's good to great. And if I don't start seeing it soon, I'm going to be a lot more upset at the coach. I mean, I already think I think Vrabel gets off so scot-free because everybody wants to just blame Mariota and talk about Mariota and do this, that no one ever points a finger at Vrabel. And so I'm the only person that does that, but I'm okay with it. But to me, I mean, this is supposed to be a good football team. And the fact that they, you know, entered the offseason and the regular season without a right guard is very disconcerting. You know, it's disconcerting that the left tackle, who's probably the best player on the team, got popped for 4 games of PEDs. It bothers me that Derrick Henry, God bless him, can't catch the ball. All of those things, I think, are bothering me right now. And the Titans need to get him cleaned up because I think their talent is good enough to be a good team in this league. 615-737-1025. The Titans are not upset about being 1-2. Floyd Delaney Walker says, things would have been different back in the day. We get into that coming up next. And should they be different for this Titan team? It's Jared and the GM live from Pete and Terry's Tavern. First, let me tell you about what it is on the menu that is so great out here at Pete and Terry's Tavern. Let me pull it up in my email. Apparently, Pete and Terry's Tavern, happy hour right here at Bridgestone Arena, 3 to 6, $5 domestic draft, $6 draft craft draft, $7 specialty cocktail, and a $12.50 burger and brew all day long. That's out here at Bridgestone Arena, Pete and Terry's Tavern. So if you're coming to the game, swing on by. Jared the GM, it's ESPN 102.5 The Game.